So we said yesterday 600,000 people saw the godly revelation at Sinai. Is that correct? Where does the number 600,000 appear? What? Let's start again. The Torah says, when the Jews left Egypt, there were 600,000 men aside from children. So now, can we assume there were at least as many women? No. Yes? More. Is a fair assumption? More or less?
More.
Generally, today, the statistic is more. So we have another 600,000 women. We have 600,000 men ages 20 to 60, right? Plus another 600,000 women. So now we're holding at 1,200,000. Can we assume we have another 600,000 children and old people? Makes sense? Okay, so how many people saw the revelation at Sinai? Approximately somewhere around 2 million people, right? But plus Moshe, right? Okay. So we're somewhere around 2 million people. So 2 million people saw the revelation. Now, Michael, remind me. What did we say about a revelation of prophecy? Is a revelation of prophecy seen with the naked eye?
No, it's not.
Okay, so what? Yes.
It's. So I'm sorry.
What? Yes. What happens at prophecy?
Maybe it's a different shield. It's like kind of a feeling of being overcome. Something along those lines.
Oh, okay, so now we're talking. Speaking to the soul, but rather than the body. Now, help me out over here. Something with a B. Remind me your name. Robbie. What did we say is the proof that Maimonides quotes that prophecy has to be crystal clear and that the prophet can't have an iota of doubt as to whether what he's witnessing is prophecy? We discussed yesterday at the end of our learning that Maimonides quotes a logical proof from someone who was very kind and he didn't act that would pose questions if not for the fact that prophecy is crystal clear. What did we mention yesterday?
Avram.
Explain, we're listening.
Alright, so when he told Avram to go sacrifice his child, he was ready to sacrifice his son, and we said Abraham asked us to do this with him. He said, "Would you please sacrifice yourself?" He didn't have to say please. He just said, "You have to go sacrifice yourself."
We said, wait. That's a different point. Chaim, can you help him out? Jordan, you want to help him out? Jordan's not here today?
No, he's here.
Okay. Say that.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. The question is as follows. We said that a vision of prophecy is crystal clear, and there cannot be room for doubt in the prophet's mind as to whether what he saw was an hallucination, a dream, or a vision of prophecy. It must be crystal clear that God spoke to him, and God told him to do that. For if not, Jeremy, help us out. If not, then what? Right. Then we wouldn't look positively at what Abraham did. And we know that on Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, throughout the year, even when we begin every Shemona Esrei 3 times a day, we attribute ourselves to Avram. We look at him as the father of kindness.
So how do you know if you're talking to God or if you're just...
So if you are, it must be clear. Because if it weren't clear, then you're not talking to God. Now, let's pick up from there. Who could tell me, how do I become a prophet?
God comes to you.
Wait. One at a time. God comes to me. Okay. We got a partial answer from Howard. How do I become? Yes. Mr. Goodman, you wanted to answer us. I confused Goodman with P. Right. Okay. Tell me, how does one become a prophet?
You like born with it?
No. Okay, so I'll tell you the answer. So there are two components in order to become a prophet. Component number one, the person has... No. A person has to perfect their traits. Meaning we work our way up Traits. Yes. Do I get angry? Do I let my emotions take control of me, or am I in control? Am I?
13 principles. How many principles are there?
There are 13. But wait.
But it's in it, isn't it? Well, the
not exactly. No. But there is an order that the Talmud tells us how a person evolves within his traits. Those of you who are curious, tomorrow come by. I'll show you where it shows the order, how you work your way up. There's a whole book explaining, based on that section of the Talmud, how we work our way up. And when we perfect our traits, then we are fit for prophecy.
We said
there are two components. We haven't yet gotten to the second one. One guy at a time, but please, it's a little hard to hear when everyone else is talking. Yes?
We said to be created in the image of Hashem. That voice, Hashem is always described, and often described as being angry, either at the Jewish people or the non-Jews. So then why, how can we be...
Blessed.
How are we not allowed to lose...
We have to be blessed.
How are we not meant to be angry ourselves?
That's an excellent question. That's a really, really good question. That question is so good that... I want to see if we can have time to answer that question in some 10 minutes. It's not a question that I could answer in 1 second. Meaning it's a little bit... The answer here is a little bit evolved. Let's hold off on it. It's an excellent question. I hope we will have the opportunity. Please remind me. Later in the week we'll get back to it. Or within the Mishnayot. We will have Mishnayot that discuss anger. And over there, we'll try to go more in depth into this concept. Please remind me. I don't want to forget. You deserve an answer.
But,
okay, we'll get there. Okay, now. So we're... Why am I recording everything? Do you guys know?
Oh, you're recording everything?
Yeah. I have a website called TorahForMe.org, and we have about 30,000 downloads per month. People,
hello internet users.
No, why do we do this? Because you guys are learning here for 2 months. But imagine after you leave here, you want to continue learning, so you can go online and download all the classes for free. Seriously. And we have a lot of guys who leave here. I also have an email list. We send out emails of the classes. It's all available for free. And guys could keep learning. We have in Australia. You guys might know... what's his name? Schwartz. Zach Schwartz. Zach Schwartz. Zachary Schwartz. He's... Zach Schwartz. He has the other group, not the Bnei Akiva group. Okay, let's get back to our learning. No?
Oh, that was
Abonim. Palestine. No. I don't remember. Let's continue. Okay, wait. Who was reading our Mishnah? Gentlemen, let's continue. What were we reading? If this is going to distract you, we'll shut it up.
No one should have done like that.
Okay. Daniel, you were reading the Mishnah. So we said Moshe received the Torah at Sinai. We said that Moshe received the Torah with the vision of prophecy. We said that there are two components for prophecy, but being that we were interrupted, we never got to the second one. We'll have to get back to it later.
Don't you need
we said,
legal permission to report it?
I don't know. Let me know. Let me know. Let's continue. Yes. Yes. Oh, so I want to ask a question here. Michael, tell us. Moshe tells us if other people will have prophecy after me. If anyone contradicts me, kill him. So it says in the Torah, right? If any prophet comes about and says something different than the Torah, he gets a death penalty.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so now, how are we to understand that? Moshe Rabbeinu himself said there are going to be other prophets. So, how do we give... So the next prophet comes along and says, God changed his mind. You don't have to eat kosher anymore.
That was Jesus.
I didn't say. I'm just asking a question.
Kill him.
Listen, listen to Michael. He's saying something very smart.
Because we all received the Torah at Sinai, we know.
Are we going to get
not only do we know that what you know Moshe says to be correct, we know that ourselves. So if someone comes along and contradicts that, if we have that belief already instilled in us, why should we change our beliefs?
So let's go one step at a time. What Michael just told us is the following. If the question was, why is Moshe's prophecy so powerful that any prophet that would contradict it would get the death penalty? And the answer, what Moshe just told us, well, another prophet also speaks to God. We've had in our history prophets who were real prophets. They were prophets who God spoke to, and then they switched. They became false prophets. They tried to set up their own cults. They tried to set up idol worship, and they had most of the Jewish people following them in error.
Jesus.
No, it begins with the time after David HaMelech, when David's son Shlomo became king. There was his arch nemesis was, who knows, Yeravam ben Nevat. And Yeravam ben Nevat was a person who spoke to God, and God told him, you, me, and David. God says, me, David, and you, we go walking together in the Garden of Eden. And Yeravam ben Nevat says, who's first, me or David? So God says, well, David comes first. So Yeravam ben Nevat says, well, then God, no thanks. And Yeravam ben Nevat turns around and sets up two golden calves and gets the whole Jewish people to follow him in idol worship. Now, Yeravam ben Nevat was a person who merited to have contact with God. God spoke to him. He was on a very high level. And yet, for ulterior motives, he led the Jewish people astray. Now, he did it not in the name of prophecy. He did it, he came along and he used his cunning to show derivations from the Torah to contradict the Torah. He uprooted the calendar, and slowly but surely he brought the majority of the Jewish people to follow him into idol worship. The masses, the 10 tribes, were following him into idol worship. Teaches us something. Now the Torah tells us, had he walked in and said, God revealed himself to me and told me we should all bow to the golden calves I erect, we would have immediately given him the death penalty. And the question we're asking is why, and Michael gave us the correct answer. What Michael says is what it says in Maimonides, in the onset of Maimonides' work. The Rambam gives us the basics of Jewish faith. And what the Rambam writes is, if I witness something myself, then if you come and tell me it's different, then I say, I know what I saw, I know what is. And our connection to Sinai, this Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, is not like a prophet walking in and saying, you know, I walked on water, you know, I cured the blind, you know what I did? 10 people walk in and say, you know what he did? It's not the same thing. When Moshe gave us the Torah at Sinai, 2 million people stood with Moshe at the feet of Sinai, all the Jewish people, and they all witnessed that prophecy.
You don't remember that.
Oh, so now you're asking an excellent question. Remind me your name, please.
Dion.
Dion or Dion? Dion is asking a question that I asked when I was a little bit younger than you. When I was back about 14 years old, so I was sitting and philosophizing with my friends, and I asked Dion's questions. Wait a second, but we weren't there. How come we don't have a set time that we sit down, and each generation tells the next generation, you know what, this is what was. I was there, my father told me, his father told him, we should have something like that. No, I wasn't there. Right? Makes sense. Guys, you know the answer, so think a little bit.
Isn't that Shavuot?
That's what the first Mishnah is.
Oh, so Howard says, that's Shavuot, that's Pesach. What are we doing on Shavuot? We're coming up to Shavuot?
Sitting up on that night.
We're saying to our children, son, I'm sitting here, you know, on this night. How many years ago? How many years ago was the Torah given?
4,000.
Well, what year are we in now? We'll get back to that point. We'll get back to that point. Let's not lose our train of thought. On this night, and we'll discuss how many years ago, approximately 3,000 years ago, approximately 3,000 years ago, on this night, a little bit more than 3,000 years ago, the Torah was given. When we sit at the Seder, Pesach night, we're also telling our children, and you know what? Jews all over the world are doing this. I want, if we're already discussing this point, I want us to go one more step. Jeremy, who's the oldest person you know?
Sorry?
Who's the oldest person you know?
Still alive.
That you've known in your life?
That you knew.
Jeremy, the only person.
I will try to.
Guys, Jeremy, who's the oldest person you know? Think for a minute.
Maybe your grandparents, dude.
Yeah, but they're not the oldest people.
Father, who's the
oldest? How old are your grandparents?
About
75. About 75. Let's think for a second. Wait. You will probably see your children who will live into the 22nd century, I hope. Correct?
Hopefully.
You've seen your grandparents who saw the beginning of the 20th century. Correct?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. So you are a link. You link 75 years back and you link approximately 100 years forward.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
So now let's think about that. He's a link of approximately 200 years. If we want to go back 3,000 years to Sinai, and all it takes is a person like Jeremy to link us 200 years, how many people does it take to link us back to Sinai?
15.
That's not such so many people.
You need to know the kids, you have more, like Jeremy, you have his grandparents. Three people with 200 years.
Yeah, and plus...
Can't just say, I'm 200 years, I'll 200 years each time for one person.
Count 150 years for each person.
Wait. Think more reasons. Think for a minute.
Okay, let's continue.
Let's
make it 30 people. We'll go Europe. Have it. It's 30 people. It's still not that far back. Okay, let's continue. What did Moshe receive at Sinai?
Wheels.
Yes.
I didn't
hear you.
It's in the Northern Expedition, so it's from the past.
I can't hear him.
Wheels.
Yes.
It's in the Northern Expedition.
Excellent point. Excellent. Guys, Jeremy's saying that's assume no one breaks tradition, but I want you to think for a second. Daniel, tell me. Nachmanides raises the point that Jeremy just raised. And I want you to think for a second. Let's make believe the Jews wanted to take something out of the Torah. Add a section. Add a sentence. If the Torah was something that was the property of individuals, then individuals can change things. But let's think for a second. Historically, who are the most literate people in all of history? Who are the people who were referred to by the Muslims? Where are we called the people of the book? Nowhere in our history. We are called the people of the book by Muhammad. That's how he refers to the Jewish people. We're not called the people of the book. Muhammad called us the people of the book. Why were the Crusaders so marveled? Why was it that the Jews were moneylenders? Because we were always literate. Jews always had books of Torah in their home.
Yeah,
That's part of it. That's true. But we were allowed to be wine merchants, which we also were. It's an involvement of many things. You're right. It's not only this point. Granted, it's a product of a few points. But the point is that we've met today with Jews from Yemen, and we haven't seen for a millennium. We've met today with Jews from Turkey, Iraq. We're all carrying the same Torah. And furthermore, when the Muslims persecuted the Jews and claimed that we took Muhammad out of the Torah, what does Maimonides answer them? Think for a second. This claim dates back almost a millennium. Gentlemen, think for a second. What do they have in Rome? They have an ancient translation of the Torah. Remember, the Torah was translated 2 millennia ago, before Muhammad. So Maimonides says, if you want to question our Torah, and you claim we changed the Torah, why don't you go look at the Romans' translation of the Torah? And that's identical to ours. So you can't say that we've changed something. The Romans, they just took the Torah and translated it. And that translation dates back before Muhammad. That's Maimonides' answer. Fair answer?
Yeah,
we answered you two answers. You notice. One, it's a book that was widespread throughout the Jews. We all have the same copy. Two, you have old editions that were not even in our possession that attest to the same thing. But I want us to go one more step. What did Moshe Rabbeinu receive at Sinai? Oh, guys, you heard what he just said? I feel bad. I used to have candies. I'll have to get candies. I used to give out candies for good answers. We'll get candies. Gushers are expensive in Israel. I can't afford that. Sorry. Okay. Okay. Gentlemen, one second. What did he just tell us? And I want you guys to think about what this means for a second. The Torah is written in which language?
Hebrew.
Is there any word other than Hebrew in the Torah? Anything else? Yes, in the Torah there are multiple languages. Where does the Torah say we have to put on tefillin? Yes, it does.
It does, but it doesn't.
Ah, what does the Torah call it on in Shema? Oh, what does it say?
Bind Shema between your eyes.
What do we call it in tefillin? What do we call the tefillin? We haven't heard you, Ariel. Tell me, what is the Torah? Wait, guys. I want to hear his voice. Tell me. Okay, so let's think for a second. Let's review the Shema. Guys, easy. What's so funny? Hey, wait. We have a Mishnah that tells us. We will get to that Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Lo abayshan lamed. The Mishnah says, if someone is embarrassed, they cannot learn. So,
I'm struggling.
Guys.
It's Robbie Golden.
He already said the answer, so he knows his stuff.
Josh, right? Josh told us that Moshe Rabbeinu got the written law on the oral law. Ian, could you tell me what's the written law on the oral law?
The written law is the laws that are written in the Torah through God, and moral law is the laws that have been interpreted by us and the rabbis.
Dean, could you expand on that? Who wants to expand on that? Go ahead, Ariel. But guys, do me a favor. Let him talk.
Okay, well, the Torah, like the oral law, explains the deep meaning, like exactly what we have to do. Like, it doesn't say in the Torah how to put on tefillin, but in the oral law, it explains how we have to put it on, how it has to be made, the whole process of it.
Excellent. Now let's go further. The Torah, nowhere in the Torah does it say, Howard, that the tefillin have to be black. That's a tradition we have from Moshe from Sinai. Nowhere. Yeah. It's a tradition we have in the.
Well, it doesn't really appear to him. He saw the back of him.
Okay. So when we got the Torah at Sinai, we got everything. Now I want to tell you something that you might not like. And you might not understand. And really, we have to have a whole class on this concept.
Are you going
to
give us an answer?
If it really bothers you, then eventually I'll give you an answer. If it doesn't bother you too much...
I don't even want to be here for it. I'm serious. I might get anything you need to get an answer.
Okay, so I'll tell you what. If it bothers you, remind me tomorrow. I'll give you an answer. Moshe Rabbeinu, it says, when he received the Torah... Okay, fine. If it bothers you that much, I'll give you the answer. But you remind me of a story. I have to share with you a story. There was once a big rabbi who wanted to get a big rabbi for his daughter. He wanted to get a good mate for his daughter. So he went to the top academy, and he posed them with a question. He came, and everyone knew that he was the chief rabbi, so he was everyone wanted to have a chance at his daughter. So he wrote in, and he said, he posed this difficult question to them, and Josh, it's even distracting me. So he posed this question to all the students. They all sat and thought, and after a day and a half, no one had an answer. So he said, okay, goodbye. He went to his chariot, and one student came running after him. He says, Rabbi, but wait, tell me the answer. So he said, okay, and I want you for my daughter. So it's, I don't have a daughter of marriageable age, but good for you if you want the answer. The concept that Chazal teach us is that when Moshe received the Torah, he received everything that any student in the future would ultimately say new within the Torah. What does that mean? That means everything the prophet Isaiah, Yechezkel, right? Everything every prophet said, Moshe received. Now, tell me. I cannot see who's sitting next to Jeremy. Who's the guy with the hood?
Mickey,
sorry. I just can't see you with the hood on. You guys understand the concept that means that every individual sitting here at the table has potential in Torah that no one else has. Every one of you is a part of this link. We are in the process of reading the tradition, but the tradition continues with us. If you only learn enough to know to align your thoughts with the tradition, doesn't happen in a day, and it doesn't happen in a month, then there is potential in the Torah that can only be revealed by you. And you. And you. And you. Each one of you has potential in the Torah that no one else can reveal. That's why if a person discovers things in the Torah, he has to write them down. They shouldn't be forgotten, because you cannot assume someone else will come up with that. You know, that guy sitting here in this room came up with amazing chidushim, guys who walked in knowing less than you. You should know you're one of the more advanced groups we have here now. You guys have a responsibility to yourselves, to the people, to the Torah. Each one of you has potential that no one else has.
But all of this Torah has been learned before.
That's exactly the point. The Torah can be learned again, but there are going to be revelations in the Torah that no one stumbled upon but you.
Ah,
so Moshe knew everything that everyone was would future would, that everyone would reveal in the future as well. That's true. That is part of what Moshe was taught in the 40 days and 40 nights.
So
here, and here's the answer I didn't want to give, but being that it would bug Daniel, I'm going to give it. Even though Moshe received all of that, he did not pass all of that onward. Why not? Maybe it's beyond human capacity. God could teach it. Maybe Moshe could. So he, God, when God's the teacher, maybe you could learn it. But maybe if you're the teacher, it's not the same thing. Maybe. Okay, guys, let's move forward. Yeah.
I'm still about the oral, right? It was a sin to write down the oral Torah, correct?
Technically, yes.
So does that mean...
Just a second. Look. Josh, what's your Chavrus's name? Rabbi, do me a favor. It's really hard to hear him when you're talking. Yeah, I'm with you.
So, does that mean when the Beis Hamikdash is rebuilt, I'm going to have to burn all the memorials?
That's a good question. Let's wait. We'll have to get back to that. Maybe. I'll tell you. This I can't promise you. I'll give you an answer to. But if we finish the tractate early enough, then we'll have time to get back to other topics. Write down this point. This is one topic we could get back to. Okay. Let's continue. Ian, you want to lead us? So we said Moshe received the Torah at Sinai. We expanded on Moshe. We expanded on Moshe's prophecy being stronger than any other prophet. And now David, we understand why, right? And we understand why if any other prophet's going to walk onto the scene, we won't accept what he said. We understand that prophecy is a vision of the soul. We understand that prophecy is an evolvement of traits. As we perfect our traits, we can reach a point where potentially we will receive prophecy. We have not yet discussed the second component of prophecy. And we said that Moshe Rabbeinu received the written law together with the oral law, which Ariel rightly said, involves many details which you cannot derive from the Torah itself, but rather are in the oral law. Now, let's move forward. Moshe kivel Torah miSinai. Moshe received the Torah from Sinai. Now, your definition, what you said that Sinai is really an event, maybe we can go with it now that we understand the importance of the revelation specifically at Sinai, right?
Yep.
We can understand that. And then maybe Sinai can make more sense to us. There's more room to discuss why we refer to it as Sinai, not for today, maybe we'll get to it a different time. If anything I mention that we'll discuss a different time really bothers you, then during the times you have for Chavrutot, you could come over to me and I'll tell you the stuff I can't expand in class. Let's move forward. Who's going to read? Who wants to lead us with the reading? Robbie, go ahead. Okay, Howard, you'll translate. Go ahead. Umisara.
Robbie,
Okay, what does that mean, Howard?
And from, transferred from Yeshua.
And transferred, Sarah, Moshe Rabbeinu gave it over, Limsor is to give over, Sarah, Moshe Rabbeinu gave the Torah over. And we just defined, as Daniel insisted, we defined, that what Moshe gave over to Yeshua was not the full amount that Moshe received, but Moshe still gave over to Yeshua. Does anyone know? Moshe is referred to as the sun. What's Yeshua referred to as?
The grandson.
The moon. Good guess, though. The moon. Because Yeshua is like a reflection of Moshe. So Yeshua received the Torah from Moshe. Gentlemen, do you know how the procession went when Moshe came to teach Torah?
No.
Okay, Moshe came down. He taught it once. Yeshua was there. We'll spend a different time on this. Well, let's move forward. So Moshe gave it over to Yoshua. Yoshua was the next leader of the Jewish people. He led us into the land of Israel and conquered the land of Israel with us. Yes, the Yoshua. Yeah, Howard, what does that mean?
Yoshua to the old people.
Who are the old people? Who knows? One at a time. One at a time.
The elders.
The elders. Explain, Ian.
Who
are
the old people?
The judges.
The judges.
Wait. Ian's talking. Yeah.
There were the judges that Moshe gave the judgment, because Moshe was getting sick of everyone coming up to him and asking him to judge something. So he gave his knowledge off to, I think, 70 other individuals.
Excellent answer. Excellent answer. The issue is that those elders did not live so long. So that's why the commentaries have to point out, we would all assume, like Ian said, the commentaries have to point out that these are not those elders. There were two sets of elders. There was another set of elders, and do you know who they were?
The leaders of the
tribe. No. They were the people that when the Jews were in Egypt, do you guys know what kapos are?
Kapos.
Yeah, who? What are kapos? Correct. Tell us, David, what are kapos?
Nathan.
Sorry, I get confused with the hearts. Slowly.
Kapos are the Jewish guards, and they were quite cruel often. They were employed by the Nazis to keep the Jews under control.
Correct. So this concept that the Nazis implemented is a concept that began back in Egypt. In Egypt, there were people who were put, they were responsible for the Jews, and they were told, you're given a whip, you ensure that the Jews produce. If they don't produce the quota, you get whipped instead of the Jew. So now this man is standing there, and he has 10 Jews under his control, and he has to wonder, what's he going to do? The Torah tells us, va-yu-ku, they were beaten. Rather than beat their brethren, they went down and helped them, and they tried to make the quota, and they had no possible way of making the quota, and these people were beaten. They accepted the lashes, and they did not beat their brethren. And so, when we left Egypt, even though they weren't the elders, they weren't the oldest people, they weren't the smartest people, they were people who received lashes on behalf of their brethren, they were appointed another series of elders. And because they weren't so old, they outlived the other elders. They lived and they went in. Let's continue. So Yeshua gave over the tradition to those elders.
Wait, I thought no one who came out of Mitzrayim survived.
Excellent question. Excellent. Wow. You guys are with it. Kol kavod. What did you eat for breakfast?
Bread.
Really good.
Okay. I have to get back to you on that. I don't know the answer. It's a good question. I mean, I can guess, but you deserve a true answer, not a guess.
The one who escaped Egypt didn't make it into Jerusalem as part of the punishment. I mean, to Israel, part of the punishment. So that's important.
Right, but if Yoshua gave over to them, so he's got a good point. If Yoshua gave to those Kenim, so do we say they were so young? I didn't see anyone that I have a guess. I'm not sure if my guess is right, so we have to check. Good question. I feel bad. I don't have candies here today. Okay, so Yoshua gave it over to this Kenim. Let's continue. David, you want to read? David, you'll read. Go ahead. Have it? So Yeshua gave it over to this Kenim. Who wants to translate? Dean, you'll translate? In Hebrew, go ahead. Uz Kenim. So the Zkenim, just saying, let Dean translate. The Zkenim Ninvi'im. You want to show him, Josh? David, you have the place? So now Dean, find the place, you'll translate the next line. David, go ahead. The elders, they gave it over to the
prophets.
Prophets, go ahead, David, continue. Okay, just a second. You want to translate that? You have it, Dean? Wait. Michael, we can't continue. Michael, come on. Go ahead, Dean.
Transmitted to the men of the great assembly.
Who transmitted to the men of the great assembly?
The prophets.
Okay, who knows who the men in the Great Assembly were?
Sanhedrin.
Wait. Sanhedrin was the high court.
Why did he say that did the Jewish people at the beginning of the Second Temple?
You want to explain more?
Yeah, sure.
It included, yeah.
Ezra, Mordechai, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malki.
Okay, so let's pause. And Bezrat Hashem, this is the point where we're going to maybe let's try to finish the Mishnah. Let's make a run for it. So these are the men of the Great Assembly. What does that mean? Okay.
Doesn't it just describe that Moshe passed through because someone else said it's fast. So
let's summarize what we saw till here, and then we'll focus a little bit on the men of the Great Assembly.
When they started to write down the oratory.
Nope.
Did someone already say that?
Tell me, who knows? What caused the downfall of the Jewish people in the first temple? What were the three major sins? Good, you want to explain?
Can you hear it in
English? Is that the killing, sexual deviance?
Okay, so now, one second. Then you said what he just said in regular English, everyone understands it.
Let's start again.
He said there were three major sins that caused the destruction of the first temple. Did you catch what he said?
Idolatry.
Okay, so we have those three major. Who could explain to me why the Jewish people were so interested in following the pagan ways of their neighbors? Why?
They were fun.
It was fun.
Okay. Yeah, the Torah forbids us from doing anything that's like. Not some things like eating bacon and stuff is like, it's like yummy, but we're still not allowed to, like, we're meant to restrain ourselves, but the Jews at the time couldn't restrain themselves from idolatry, from idol worship, and what was life like?
Gentlemen, he said a very interesting thought. He says it's fun. I want you to think for a second if there's another answer.
Not always fun, but like, if your neighbors are doing it, then it's sort of like peer pressure-ish.
So he said answer number two. They were affected by their neighbors. Both answers are correct. Temptation. And there's a third answer.
Temptation,
yeah. Okay,
miracles.
Let's expose ourselves to two thoughts. Two contradictory thoughts a little bit, but really they're not. Yes?
We don't have a temple. And yet there are some people that don't engage in that knowledge of the temple. Even more so that there was a temple. We can sacrifice something with 5 times down. How does it make sense that they were engaging in that kind of stuff? There's obvious
presence. Did you hear his question? So he thinks he knows the answer. Let's hear it. Yeah. But guys, wait. Let's hear him out. Yes.
So, like, you know how you have like an inclination towards women in the old days? They would have like inclination in order to serve false gods, like idols and that. Same way you crave food or something. So they prayed like in order to like change the inclination to stop.
What a beautiful answer! I want to explain on what he said. Ian, what do you want to say? Yeah. I think if we keep going, we will have to raise our hands, just because with such a large group, we're not hearing one another. Ian, what were you saying?
Also, because they were so dependent on having the leader, I guess, they were so dependent on having the leader, that because they didn't really, and they couldn't really see God or believe God, they thought this echo was somehow that he could see us and actually begin to believe it, rather than having this faith that it is up there somewhere, that to actually see it doesn't make it easy for us.
Okay, let me summarize what all of you said. You guys gave excellent answers. Excellent answers. Did you guys hear what Ian said? Josh, did you hear what he said? You missed an excellent answer.
You said that
we can replay it off the recorder.
It's easier to believe in something you see. Let's add 2 points. What you started saying, I thought you were headed this way. Maimonides says every time a person leaves the faith, every time a person tries to find the shortcut, it's because he wants all the things the Torah prohibits, primarily women. Maimonides says, you know why Aristotle wasn't Jewish? Because Aristotle didn't want to limit his promiscuity. Aristotle wanted to take women wherever he wanted, whatever he wanted. You guys don't know what kind of animal Aristotle was. So Aristotle didn't want to, even though he was very close and he was contemplating Judaism. Maimonides says, the wisest of men did not adopt Judaism for the simple reason that they didn't want to constrain themselves. So that's in addition to everything you said, because everything you guys said was correct. And there's one more addition, and that is that, and that's in the direction a little bit that Ian was saying, but it's to add to what you're saying. What you said was correct, but there's more. The Jewish people wanted to serve God. Imagine a guy's living out in the spot in the north. In order for him to come to the temple, he's got to make a trek. He's got to put his life on hold, get together his animals, put someone in charge of the flocks, deal with his family, and then make this huge trek down to Jerusalem, which in those days could take him 3 weeks. Right? Okay? The guy wants to serve God in his home, and he doesn't know how to do it. What's he going to do? God forbids us from bringing private sacrifices. The guy says, you know what? What all my neighbors do to their idols, I want to come close to God. Here's what I'll do. I'll make a private sacrifice in my backyard. He goes to his backyard, builds an altar, takes a sheep, says, God, I feel bad. I haven't been close to you. I want to communicate with you. Please accept my sacrifice. I want you to bless my wife. She's pregnant. I want you to bless the child. He's sick. Do me a favor. I need your help. Slaughters the animal, burns it as a sacrifice to God. His 7-year-old son is standing in the backyard watching, and he sees, what did his father just do? Slaughter an animal on an altar. He looks over the border, he sees the neighbor, he slaughters an animal, and he also prays. And only he's praying to Zeus, and his father prayed to God. The kid grows up, and he sees, every so often, whenever there's a time of need, his father goes out to the backyard, slaughters an animal, prays to God. What does the neighbor do? Every time he's in time of need, slaughters an animal, prays to Zeus. The neighbor seems to be at least as successful as his father, sometimes more successful. What does the kid grow up thinking? What does the next generation say? I can do Zeus, I can do God, or I can do both. Why don't I do both? The majority of the Jewish people in the time of the first temple did not believe in the pagan gods to the exclusion of God, but rather they did Shitu. They said, God, I know you're running the show, but I also know there's Zeus. There are all kinds of deities up there. I'll serve all of them. They worshipped all of them because they saw that our neighbors are successful. The Ammonites, the Moabites, they do all these things. So that's an additive answer. Now, why is this additive answer so important? Because our sages tell us that the men of the great assembly slaughtered the desire for idolatry. The reason we today do not have that desire is because the men of the great assembly got together and said, we're doing away with this one. How'd they do that? So some say Kabbalistically. And some say that when they instituted 3 times a day prayer, the Shemona Esrei that we say today, they gave every person the capacity to connect with his Creator 3 times a day, so people didn't feel the need to go to the backyard to bring a slaughter, to slaughter an animal. And once they did that, so they resolved the issue of idolatry, in that regard, that cause for idolatry. They didn't resolve the other causes that you guys pointed out, but they resolved that need because people were connecting to God 3 times a day. And that is our first door. When we speak about the men of the great assembly, we have to recognize they composed the Shemona Esrei that we say today, and they composed all the blessings and prayers that we know today, the way we know Judaism today. They did that. Now we're going to pick up here tomorrow with why are they called the men of the great assembly? What was so great about them? Even though what we've learned thus far seems pretty great, but there are other reasons that they were great. Now.